The following podcast contains strong language and adult themes and is intended for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hanky Digital presents The Skin. Show me what lies beneath. An audiobook podcast by Christian Heinke. Chapter 12, Dead Man Walking. The day had not gone well for Professor Eric Winter, Catherine Williams thought to be responsible for the serial murders. But the situation had worsened. The murders continued, and Ella Henson's death made the professor's stomach churn. He now had a grim suspicion of who was behind the killings, and that realization was dreadful, terrible. He unlocked the drawer of his expansive desk, retrieving a single file from inside. Habitually, he closed the empty drawer once more. He glanced at the file, not bothering to read the name he knew by heart. In frustration, he tossed it into the waste paper basket. Then he poured bourbon over it, lit it on fire, and watched as the incriminating document succumbed to the flames. Smoke billowed upward, and Winter's gaze followed its ascent until he noticed the smoke detector on the ceiling. He had forgotten about it. Before long, the fire alarm blared. Fortunately, there was no sprinkler system in the house. The alarm's sole purpose was to prevent him from suffocating in his sleep in case of an actual fire. Enraged at his own stupidity, he opened the glass porch door, carried the still-burning waste paper basket outside, and let the smoke escape into the night. The alarm ceased. Winter took a deep breath. After ensuring that the flames had not spread to the bushes or the lawn, he closed the porch door again. As he turned around, he noticed someone sitting in his chair. "I never thought you were the type who liked to play with matches, Professor," the figure said. "Oh my God," Winter thought as he stared into the disfigured, stinking face of his creation. He felt like Victor Frankenstein receiving an unannounced visit from his gruesome creature. "What have I done?" The figure grinned, flashing a razor in the glow of the flames. "Shall we begin then, Professor?" it asked as it stood up. Leonard Johnson parked a block away from the professor's villa and continued on foot. Just a few meters into his walk, a Georgetown Fire Department engine sped past him, sirens blaring. Something had happened. Johnson was certain Winter was dead. His near-perfect intuition had earned him respect from Senator Williams and other influential figures. He briefly considered leaving the gun and silencer in the car, but ultimately decided against it, running forward as he heard the explosion. The villa was engulfed in flames. The explosion was likely caused by leaking gas pipes. Several fire engines struggled to control the blaze. With a resounding crash, the roof of the once magnificent building collapsed. The firefighting team leader called the men back, assuming both the villa and its occupants were lost. Their only task now was to prevent the fire from spreading. The police were already on the scene. Without hesitation, Johnson approached one of the officers and displayed a badge from his extensive collection. Tonight, he was with the Secret Service. "Are you Johnson?" the young policeman asked. He nodded. "Looks like we're running late." "Who informed you that the professor wants to kill himself?" the officer inquired. "My boss," Johnson replied. The policeman pulled out paper and pencil to write down the name. Johnson shook his head. "No, you don't understand. I mean the real boss." The officer still looked confused. "The president." "Oh," exclaimed the policeman, tucking his notepad away. When he looked up again, Johnson had already vanished. The presidential card always carried weight. The policeman glanced around, waiting a moment. Only after he was sure the agent was out of sight did a grin spread across his face. This Secret Service fool had mistaken him for a deputy, all because of the uniform. Regardless of what the agent thought, someone skilled in deception could easily dupe anyone. He walked to his rental car, parked away from the chaos, and discarded his uniform. Satisfied, he got behind the wheel and drove off. Everything had gone according to plan so far. It pained him that this incompetent Louisiani and her simple-minded partner were blaming Catherine for his actions. Ella Henson should have died anyway. Due to her flaw, her death only exonerated Catherine. Winter's death hadn't followed the rite either, but it had been crucial to the grand plan. Now, all that remained was the goddess herself. He could hardly wait to hear her reaction to the gift he was about to present. If she could still speak, of course. He envisioned sinking his teeth into Catherine Williams' fresh, pumping heart, and a pleasant shiver of anticipation washed over him. Columbia University's Department of Clinical Psychology was located at the north end of campus in Teachers College on 120th Street. Helen, whose last exposure to academia had been at the FBI National Academy in Quantico, pushed past students whose fashion choices ranged from casual to provocative, even downright shocking. She felt a mix of wonder and confusion. Hadn't she read somewhere about young people returning to traditional values? Here, however, there was no sign of that development. She shuddered at the thought that these disheveled figures, some of whom had an unpleasant odor, should practice better hygiene. A giant, likely a basketball player from the university, bumped into her, looking down with an expression that made her feel like she was in a fairy tale alongside Jack and the Beanstalk. "Sorry, lady," the giant said, then stomped away. She was about to unleash a hearty Italian curse when she remembered that there was a chance she might be understood here. "Detective, over here," Dr. Peterson called from the end of the corridor. He stood next to an older gentleman with white hair and steel-blue eyes, Professor Umbridge. Helen navigated through the crowd and shook hands with the two men after Peterson made the introductions. "Do you mind?" Umbridge asked as he filled his pipe with something that reminded Helen of Columbus's regurgitated pellets. "Nope," she replied. Umbridge lit the tobacco and tossed the match into an ashtray shaped like a skull. Noticing Helen's expression, he explained, "It's a gift from my first wife." "She has taste," Helen said dryly. Umbridge pretended to ponder her statement before shaking his head. "No, she didn't have any." Helen laughed, breaking the ice. "So," Umbridge finally said, "you're trying to stop that son of a bitch. Forgive my language. I have a basic understanding of the human mind, but I can't ignore the actions of someone with such a disturbed personality." Helen liked this man. "What do you think the profile of the perpetrator looks like?" Umbridge asked, blowing out a stream of fragrant smoke. Helen cleared her throat. "All right. 25 to 35 years old. Academic." She sketched the profile as she had done for Phillips a few days earlier. Umbridge listened intently, and when she finished, he asked, "You went to the National Academy, right?" "Yes," Helen replied, not entirely sure what Umbridge meant. He looked at her. "You can tell?" "I see," she thought skeptically, but Umbridge quickly clarified, "I mean that as a compliment." "Come again?" "The New York police are fortunate to have someone with your acumen and empathic skills in their ranks." This praise was mild, but Helen was dealing with a hangover and little sleep. "So do you think you can complete the profile, Professor Umbridge?" she asked a bit sourly. He raised his bushy eyebrows in puzzlement. "Do you believe I'm here to criticize you?" Umbridge asked, glancing from Helen to Peterson. "Andy, what did you tell her?"
"Practically nothing," Peterson admitted, looking a bit embarrassed.
"Then I apologize, Detective Louisiani. I don't want to interfere in your investigation." "Then what is this about?"
"Well, I recently attended a congress in Baltimore, and a colleague there, Professor Talbot, mentioned one of his former students. Apparently, he was quite talented, but unfortunately, according to my esteemed colleague, he's also a complete schmuck."
"Is schmuck an accurate psychological term?"
Umbridge exhaled a puff of smoke with relish. How would you describe someone who has brutally raped several of his fellow students and then slit their throats, Detective? But this student's actions don't fit the profile of our killer, Helen interjected. Professor Umbridge nodded. You're an impatient woman, Miss Louisiani. Please, be gentler with an old man. Helen squirmed in her chair. Here, said Umbridge, handing her a document. This boy's term paper. Talbot sent it to me today. Aztec Fertility Rights? Helen scanned the title. Pre-Columbian Cultures were Parker Daly's major. And this Parker Daly is supposed to be the catwalk killer? Check the page with the post-it. Helen opened the page marked with a yellow sticky note, her brow furrowing as she read the headline. Sipe Totec? What's that? Just read it, came the reply. With a sigh, Helen began reading. When she finished, she froze. Oh my God, that's our man. The professor nodded in agreement. Sipe Totec was an Aztec god, right? Andy asked. Exactly. Sipe Totec was the god of renewal and spring. The Aztecs called upon him to rejuvenate the soil and ensure a bountiful harvest. And how did they do that? If Parker Daly's paper is accurate, then human sacrifices were made to Sipe Totec. The words lingered heavily in the air. My God, Helen gasped. Religions really do lead people to surpass their limits, don't they? Umbridge mused. I'm a Catholic, Helen interjected defensively. My condolences, Umbridge replied dryly. Catholics don't sacrifice people. Oh, I think many midwives and healers in medieval Europe would disagree. Aren't we digressing a little? Andy asked, trying to steer the conversation back on track. Of course we are. Excuse me. Umbridge smiled. Where were we? Ah, yes, the skinning. I'm no expert, but it's clear what Parker Daly is all about. He looked at Andy and Helen expectantly. Andy shrugged. Renewal, Helen whispered, a realization dawning on her. That's right. The high priest wore the victim's skin until it rotted. He then emerged from it as a renewed young man with flawless skin, just like a snake slithering out of its old skin or fresh shoots sprouting from decaying husks. But why does Parker Daly think he needs to renew himself? Andy asked. We'll find out when we have him, Helen replied grimly. There's just one minor problem, Umbridge said. And that would be? The court sentenced Parker Daly to life imprisonment for 3 counts of murder and rape, and he remained in Wallens Ridge State Prison in Virginia until a year ago. He's dead? I'm afraid so. A fellow inmate killed him, inflicting severe injuries shortly before he died. So your killer is probably a ghost. Are you serious? Helen looked at him in disbelief. Of course not. Ghosts and ghouls don't kill people. If you believe a tabloid like the National Inquisitor, then yes, demons and werewolves are supposedly running around New Mexico these days. But the truth is, humans kill humans. If you and I do our jobs well enough, we can be certain that Parker Daly is the catwalk killer. But he's dead. You must be mistaken. Parker Daly can't be the killer. Maybe he renewed himself. And not for the first time, Umbridge replied mysteriously. You can't seriously believe that Daly came back from the dead through those ancient Aztec rituals, do you? Helen rolled her eyes, her initial sympathy for the professor fading. I believe nothing, Detective Louisiani. You should have figured that out by now. You're the Catholic here. Do you believe a young man survived crucifixion 2,000 years ago? If so, then perhaps you should also consider that someone could do it again. Okay, I'll go to Baltimore, talk to this Talbot, and gather more information about Daly from the university administration, Andy interjected. Good, then I'll probably visit the prison in Virginia where Daly was incarcerated, Helen said. After they said goodbye to Umbridge, Helen stopped Andy. Dr. Peterson, wait. Yes, he asked. She gestured toward Umbridge's office. Charming fellow, that professor. Try getting a degree from him. Then he'll be really charming, believe me. Never mind. Change of subject. She cleared her throat. I owe you an apology. For what? If you don't know, I'll take the apology back. I don't think you can easily take apologies back. Andy laughed. She extended her hand to him. Confused, he squeezed it. Helen, she said. Andy, he replied, a bit surprised. Good, said Helen. Then that's settled. With that, she left him in the corridor, surrounded by the disheveled giants heading to their next events.
Something's creeping through the door.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about Heinke Digital Audiobook Podcasts and its author Christian Heinke, please visit heinke.digital.